Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nununada. I'm Eric Reddix. Our guest today is Larry Amick Smallwood, who grew up in Ajamug, the Lake Lena district of Mille Lacs. He has worked as a language instructor for the Minneapolis Public Schools, Neashing School, the Leech Lake Tribal College, and the University of Minnesota Duluth. Since 1999, he has served as the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Today, Larry talks about fasting and gifts that people possess and can offer to the community.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the gifts people have and the gifts that they had. You know, a lot of us people, when we were growing up back home out in the country, out in the reservations and things back in the 50s and 60s, a lot of our young people, when they reached puberty, they were sent out to fast for a few days, and you know, they went anywhere from 2 days to three, and four was pushing it pretty much. But the reason for a fast was to go and get a spiritual gift. You know, they were sent out to the woods where nobody would bother them. And there was a nice place provided for them. Somebody would make sure they went out there and made sure they wouldn't be disturbed. And that's how people knew things, know things. They were sent out probably early in the morning, and they already knew where to go, or one of the uncles or the grandfathers or the wans would take these young ones out there to that place where they were to fast. Without food or water, nothing but tobacco. And they would go out there, and they were instructed not to put anything in their mouth, not even a straw or a stick to use for a toothpick, or nothing was going in there. It was pure. And they had their tobacco, and what they would do is they would pray for a gift. Now, these young people, they didn't know what kind of gift they were going to get. So while they were out there, they just kept putting their tobacco out. You know, they were out there 24/7 for two, 3 or 4 days. And as a result of that, they would begin to have dreams, spiritual dreams, instructional dreams. They might not have come while they were out there. They might have. They might have gotten their dreams a week or two later, or a month or two later, or whatever. But they would have these dreams. And they were shown things, and they were instructed by the spirits as what to do and what their gift would be. The gift, how to help your fellow being. And that's how we had Indian healers a long time ago. Indian medicine men. Name givers. People that could do ceremonies. They were shown these things in their dreams. And today that's not happening very much anymore, because we have this generation that I'm in neglected to send their sons out to fast. There was too much interference by the time, you know, our generation came along. Everybody had TVs and they had things to do, and now it's getting worse, you know, with the TVs and all these things. Everybody wants to relate to a different culture. But, you know, these guys that had their dreams were shown how to do things like a healer. He was shown the items that he needed to use to heal somebody. After they had their dreams and stuff, they began to slowly start making their tools or whatever they needed to doctor to heal. And they were shown how to do it. Now, when somebody has somebody come over that wants to be healed, that person that wants to be healed has to take an offering to that person that's going to do the healing. And our offerings today are getting kind of a little bit not the way they used to be. I remember my folks going to see a medicine man, a healer, and they would take a couple of blankets, a big knife, a hatchet, some tobacco, and a few dollars. And they would give it to that healer, and they would say, I'm sick here, I'm sore here, or whatever, can you heal me? And of course, that healer would begin a ceremony. And the language is number one when somebody does something spiritually. So that healer would start talking in Ojibwe. First, he would tell each and every one that he healed, where he got the authority to heal. He would tell of his fast and of his dream and what he was shown. And then, after he got done talking, then he would start to heal this person. After he was finished with his ceremony, and these healers always had medicines on hand, he would give these people these medicines and say, you mix this with that, and you boil this that way, and add this in there, or whatever, and you drink it so many times a day for so many days, and you'll notice the difference. So that was one way that they would approach a healer. And the same thing, you know, you might have had somebody that's gone out to fast and that had some dreams about spirits that have instructed them, use my name when somebody comes to ask you for a name, and you will have a dream. And then when that person or the people want to get a name, again, they give an offering to that name giver. Now those gifts that they offer, that offering, that's not for the name giver. That's for the manitou, the spirits. And how much you give, you know, that's how important you think your name is. Nowadays I've seen people get names and they've given the guy $20, a pack of tobacco, and that was it, you know. Well, they don't think too highly of their names. And then also when he gives a name, he starts off again by telling of his fast and telling of the spirits that are helping him. So from there he gets a name and he gives it to that child or that young person. Now there are different ways to give names. For example, a baby. You do different things. You have a big feast or a small child, a toddler or a younger child. You know, you have a big feast for them. Adults, it's a little different. They don't need the feast, at least the way I was told. So what I do is I take the tobacco and the offering and I offer it to the spirits that I dreamed of, and I explain all that in Ojibwe. And out of that, I get a name, I give them a name. And these are ways that you help other people when you get those gifts. There are other gifts that people have. Hunting is a gift. And you have to help people when you have a gift. Hunting is a gift. You have that guy that hunts all the time and he makes sure he gives meat to the elders, to families that need it, and he always has enough for himself. Well, he's paying for his gift by giving that meat away, you know, and then he has good luck again. People that do crafts work. We needed a lot of craftsmen back then. We had a lot of craftspeople. You take the person that's good at making bows and arrows. You take a person that makes good fish traps. All those things, drums, everything. You take those people, that's a gift. Yeah, there are people that have different gifts. I mean, there are people that are good craftsmen. There are hunters. There are name givers. There are healers. And also people that are medicine men. These people in their fast, as a result of their dreams from their fast, they are shown medicines, different plants. They're instructed as to, you take this plant and this plant and that plant and you gather it, and if somebody has this kind of an ailment, you know, you give them this, you give them that. So we had a lot of people that knew medicines, and that is a gift. All these gifts I talk about, they're to help their fellow man or woman. I myself got the gift to name when I was 11 years old, and I didn't use it till I was 50. Now I've got about 200 wa'as right now, people that I've named, adults and small children. Since I did my first naming, I've had a lot of dreams myself, so I do have a lot of names that I do give. Also, singing is a gift. So we need people that need to sing our ceremonial songs. We need people that know different songs. And for someone to pick those up, that itself is a gift. Mm-hmm. And by being a good singer and knowing all these songs, you're helping the people that come to these drum ceremonies. And they too got to give in return, you know, put an offering or tobacco out for their gift. I know I myself have to do offering for the spirit that I saw. I did that just this past fall again. I went out in the woods and I did my offering. Kwema Bangivingo, Jibwim. Marajaku, Gyushkini, Gyushkini, Yuadngu. And then Isag. Mikopi, Megwayaka, Jivinandua. Dagi Kushimuad. Namur das Sugun Majan, Yujugun, the Sugun Yugun. Even the Nama the Buga with the Iki Kushimuad. Mida Shema, Ganjabama Gadenegeo, Ubuajaga Nua, Kipoajageog, Kikinua Moa Kinagego, Kiabja Tuadio, Kajaminigo Zuad, Naske Yao, Muske Kunene, Ugipoadan, Bebakano, the Zaga Keegan, Bebakan Gilmitigo, Kiabja Ajan, Oyo, we knew Jamuad. No, I gave you all on the way, very nene. Miguel gave canoe moa gave in, gave poa don gave in. On in care, gave it to get away, we know on the way odd. Paper con guy, what object to gen. We care as we do card gave in, we genition abin. We know on go. One da osajig. Oh, we are wab me go odd. Me ma gave in what the bodge more on a care guy and up in the moad. Me ma, when the number one ill isn't a cause of wind while me give a rod. Boot a kinnaweed or jibwaymud, on the jaganar to see, got in the jaganar, she was seen ma where he was it chigate. What you can give, ma dry way in the nug. He get. So pretend that was a working girl gone away, you know, that I could get to see that is a chigate here. I was on Batanin and Ma, where we ne, get naked. Me no, I go gay and go. Ne tag you sage, gay we noa. Me guess you show me in dog so gay we noa. Me ma went to the moad, gay we noa, gay kick or some wad here. Then tag you say wad. Let's kill me now on your chair. My Jagi or Oscar Shore and Nujo Gago were seeing a modern on the Shinabe. Me only tag you said me is chigate me, Maggie, do need what we ask. Me no gay and go, and Nujay is a two gago. This came on and on the towers of two now gago and no Abjava named Tigun, Matigun son, who went to go and go. This came and go. Neskege no big quackoon, was a good moat now, big quack, now I are, and there's Nikaza though. Oh, no one ate my Nikaza the bow. Megan go, Gausha, I drink the tow, Chigi or Gay, no ah. Kennegay go, Nanganega, Mojigay, Neske, when upon it 2 hours, get cane the moat and the gummon and I was a Chigadegma. When I do the awakening, we are the zit. We came down on you, Nagamun and Matagunun the Moad happening. We came the Moad, we raised him in Jermaine the Moad. Me care, guy. Guy, Bungi Maga. Guys, they be do what you keep Kushim Moad. Give you do cargo, so I get showing dog, so I can go. Gone a kin away, there's a chigase him not gay. Oh, gay go away, I said chigate, Maja, Maja, wait, we in Dawa said. Can I go? Ports that would be more than a ski. Then on the log, noon gum ni boa. Gago is a chigard me is a jargon our shim was is a jargon our shim wad. Mirs and Gago can get kings there, go no, yeah. Dobbs and dogs see you on my jargon our shim wad getting the shinabe him and boots are object to you. And what I do got meaning and dead way young. Gone ago. Can I go nin get candace in gone again? Ni boa gago and candace in nin, that's not. Guys, we can know more than good, Chai Og. Mayors, may take a minute, get canned them on. Let's get on the matures of 2 seen gig, go a kid on a ma. Chai Og and Gilga canoe more jig. Chai Og and Gilga canoe more jig, which is where we are, and may take a huge way more gig. Give a new jeans to wear, and may take a me and the thumb got coggy do on who, which is way more in Bama we noggins and gig. Yeah, we just tuned in shaking our same one because you got any draws of a bone because you want in. Came on to shaking our same way on. Putting it pure to way. They would have served green as you want to win in down to the way when the ski going in the scene up to jail. You know, Bungie is you in the bone.
This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganuninida, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Larry Amick Smallwood, a language instructor at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He is also the Director of Language and Culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and a contributing voice to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary, an online resource created by the University of Minnesota. What time of year did people go out fasting? Could they go any time?
Like I said, when they reach puberty, when their voices start to change, I used to say that's when the time to send the boys out there and do that.
I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how fasting happened in the past and how it's different today.
Yeah, you know, a long time ago, and some places still do it. They send them way out in the woods somewhere to fast. Some families or some areas, they'll just they'll wake up one morning and they'll tell the boy, "You're not eating today, you're fasting." So the boy goes about his business all day without eating or drinking anything. He's fasting, still fasting. Mm-hmm. And I've known it to be done that way, too. And like I said, different areas do it differently.
That could happen any time of year, right, when a boy does his first fast? Or
I heard mostly in the spring and the fall.
Mostly in the spring. You know.
And then a lot of them do it in the summer, too.
What happens after that first fast with people that have that? Do they go out on their own accord? Are they told by a way to go out? Or,
well, they, you know, after they're finished fasting, they come in, of course, and then there's usually a big feast given to them. Of course, they're hungry. You know, they're 2, 3, 4 days hungry, so there's a big feast provided, and they're kind of a little celebrationary fast. And they're always told, too, a lot of them are told, don't tell us your dreams. You know your dreams. You keep them to yourself. You know what to do. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them didn't tell about their dreams until they got much older. I know that one thing that I was talking about there, when you get up in the morning and you're ready to eat and they'll tell you, no, you're not eating today. That happened to me too. And some of my, I think one or two of my cousins, they did that too. You're not eating today, you're fasting. Go out in the woods and play. So that's what we did, you know. Well, not at the same time, not together, but that's what we did.
While communities vary, in Ojibwe country today, we have less people who conduct ceremonies than in the past. Can people go out after, you know, if they're adults, young adults, if they haven't gone through fasting? How does that work?
You know, a lot of young people are getting back into their culture right now, and a lot of them are older, you know, maybe in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And they know what being in the Shinabe is all about, so they want to do everything that they did a long time ago, and fasting is one of them. So, yeah, they're out there fasting in their 20s. I mean, I heard a guy say he was like 43 years old. He said, "I'm going to go and fast." Mm-hmm. And I was like, fine, you know, go for it. You know, but I heard some families say you should fast when you're young. You know, you're already, when you're old, you don't need a fast. You already should know things, but, you know, I don't know. But I know this guy said, "I'm going to go and fast." He said, "I need to fast." Oh, good, you know. Maybe you'll get a dream. But, you know, number one is the language.
Right.
So our spirits talk to us in Ojibwe.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come down and, you know, say, "Hey, Eric, why don't you be a medicine man? Here's the dandelion over here, and here's a wildwood flower over here. Mix these two, and you'll get rid of your acne." I mean, that's not the way it works.
Yep.
You know? No, it's all in Ojibwe. So.
And then, too, you mentioned types of healers, so, and types of skills that people learn from fasting, and I take it, you know, each one of those is unique, right? I mean, people kind of have this concept maybe that being a medicine man is just kind of one thing, and you can do all these different things, but really, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a different skill set, each one of these things, naming.
A lot of healers have their specialty that they work on. There's healers that their specialty might be diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Another one might be cancer. Another one might be arthritis. Another one would be stomach problems, all kinds of things, headache problems, a lot of pressure in the head. You know, their doctors know these different things, Indian mm-hmm. doctors, I'm saying, Indian mm-hmm. healers. But most of them can do pretty good on all of them. But some of them just specialize in this because they were shown the right medicine or whoever their spiritual helper is, you know, might have said, "You're going to concentrate on this." You know, so that's what he does.
I was wondering, too, if you could talk a little bit about some of the healers and people who can conduct ceremonies that we don't have as much anymore as we used to. Things like the shaking tent, those ceremonies that we don't have as many of those types of healers in our communities anymore. I mean, is that directly because we don't have as many young people fasting, or?
No, I would say it's because our young people don't know the language. They don't know the language. They want to do this, but they don't know the language. And that's the hardest part of doing anything, is the language.
Yep.
They would rather just skip the language part and just go through the motions of doing things. We've got a lot of people out there today that claim they can do this and do that, you know, but they don't know the language. And those kinds of people I tend to stay away from. I'm old school. You know, I want to hear what this medicine man or this doctor is saying to me in Ojibwe, and I want to know where he got this authority to doctor me, you know, which is the way they used to do it a long time ago.
Nope.
Okay, when I understand him in Ojibwe, what he's doing, then okay, when he talks to me, he must have understood the spirits in Ojibwe, so I want to believe this guy.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about naming ceremonies, and one thing is, and I heard you mention this in Ojibwe too, is that it's important, the type of offering that's given. And from what I understand too, is it's important to have traditional foods?
Yeah. You know, usually use the meat, the fish, the berries, the rice, you know, whatever. It's nice to have that. Some people can get all that, but, you know, and do the best they can. That's okay.
I wonder if you could explain the importance in these ceremonies when you're asking somebody to, you know, naming these other things, the importance of cloth and blankets, because that's the important thing. And why is that?
A long time ago, they used to give gifts like bows and arrows, knives, tools, what women used, you know, their tools that they had. And blankets became popular probably in the 30s and 40s when they used to have a lot of old clothes. They would cut up little, I remember my grandma doing this, cutting up old shirts, old things, and making those blankets. And that's a new blanket once they make it, so they save it. They put a lot of effort and work into it. So as they say, I'm going to save this when I need to go see the Indian doctor. I'm going to save this when I got to go get some spiritual advice or whatever. And she would give that. A lot of times tools are very important. I'm talking again about the knives, the axe, the hatchets, I've seen guns given away. Here in the late 80s, I knew a guy that gave a rifle away along with some goodies to get his name. That's how highly he thought of his name. So an old guy said one time in Mille Lacs, he said, "When the Shoshone Biwabik Miwing, Shanabe." He said, "It's good to give metal objects, metal tools, because that's what the Anishinaabe uses when he does things." I mean, I've got a lot of good gifts, great gifts. I've got anything from Pendletons to hundreds of dollars down to a few dollar store items and a pack of cigarettes. But see, I can't refuse that.
You know?
That's what people can give. That's what they can give.
Right. And I don't know if we've talked about this before, tobacco too. When somebody asks to, you know, do naming or just in general, maybe ask you for knowledge, that, you know, maybe you could talk about that, your responsibilities once you accept that tobacco or the gifts for naming.
Well, once you're given tobacco to do something, you have to follow through with it the best way you can. And it's not always possible. Tobacco is used from the beginning of the Anishinaabe. It grows all over the place. It grows here in Duluth. It grows all over, but people don't recognize it. And Shinabes will recognize it. But I don't want to tell what it is too much, because somebody will say, "Oh, man, let's go harvest that and sell it." You know, and that's not what it's for. Tobacco, we offer through our pipes or to the fire or putting it out someplace on a clean ground. We offer to the Creator and His helpers and say, "Help me this day. Help me today." That's how we pray. Back in the 50s, they started using store-bought tobacco, and when they pray, they use that too, which is okay. A lot of us still use the traditional tobacco. Sometimes we mix commercial tobacco in with it, but it's all good. It's all tobacco.
If you maybe talk just a little bit about girls and fasting, because that's kind of a little bit, I'm sure a lot of the same principles apply as far as, you know, the reasons why women would go out, but what are some of the differences?
I never really heard of women going out fasting. I'm sure they do. But you know where they got their teachings is when they first entered womanhood. Mm-hmm. Their first cycle, they were kept in a small wigwam away from the main wigwam. And for those 3 or 4 days, whatever, that's where she stayed. And that's where the grandmas and the aunties and the women would go sit out there and tell her all about life, all about motherhood, parenting, mm-hmm. all about growing up, about being a wife. That's where she would get all her lifetime education right there. And then mm-hmm. when she came out, she it was a big feast for her and also. But women do have gifts. They do have gifts. I knew medicine. My grandma was a medicine woman. Had medicines hanging up all around the house, different bags. And she knew which one everyone was, everything was. And she never fasted. She knew medicines, though. Hmm. And she would have me picking medicines. And, so they do have gifts. Oh, yeah.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Larry Amick Smallwood, for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada, visit the KUMD website at kumd.org and click on Audio Archives. Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada, is produced in cooperation with KUMD and the Department of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth, with funding provided in part by a UMD Strategic Initiative grant from the Chancellor's Office of UMD, and by N.A. Gekane Da Soyoung, the Center for Indigenous Knowledge and Language Revitalization at the University of Minnesota Duluth.